Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
You're listening to All of It on WNYC. Welcome back. Wu-Tang Clan embody New York. Born and bred in Staten Island and Brooklyn, the members of the now iconic rap group took to the mic to give voice to the struggles of poverty, racism, and police brutality that faced young black people across the city and, frankly, across the nation. But even though these men refer to themselves as family, in it, like every family, they have disagreements. But these familial squabbles were exacerbated by fame, ego, money. When Wu-Tang Clan members split to pursue solo careers in the late 90s, they really haven't been a cohesive act since. Now Wu-Tang Clan are ready to tell its story. All the triumphs, the serious beefs, the petty arguments, the real love, or at least the respect, becomes clear in a new series from music journalist and filmmaker Sasha Jenkins. The result, a four-episode docuseries titled Wu-Tang Clan of Mics and Men, awesome title, is an equal parts tense and celebratory look at a unique form of brotherhood. The first episode premieres tonight at 9 on Showtime, and Sasha Jenkins joins me in studio. Hi.
Hi.
So how did you get the members to come together to sit down together and talk to you about their history?
Well, I think they were at a point finally where they were ready to tell their story. I mean, 25 years in, there's a lot to reflect on. Mm-hmm. And it just so happens that myself and RZA share the same agent. And the agent was kind enough to say, hey, RZA and the Wu are ready to finally tell their story. You're interested? And I said, sure. Well, you got to meet RZA. Of course, I've known RZA over the years interviewing all the guys, but he was in L.A., flew to L.A. for the day, met with him, got back on a plane, gave him my pitch. And I recently learned that it was his wife who said, give the guy the job. So I always shout out RZA's better half every opportunity that I get.
Now, you said all the guys. At this point, how many members are in Wu-Tang?
I mean, you know, one guy, ODB, is no longer with us. So I guess there's nine.
Nine.
Yeah.
All right. So it's really interesting in the film, this device you used or choice you made to have them all sit together in a theater and watch footage together. And this, the body language alone is interesting because there's seats between them and some are in the back row and some are in the front row. Why did you decide? What did you hope you'd get out of that?
Well, I'd like to tout myself as a genius, but it's a combination of genius and knowing that these guys are really hard to catch up with. So I knew that if I was able to assemble them, as you pointed out, the information just in the body language alone is powerful. If you go back with no sound and just look at the body language, there's so much information that you pick up. I mean, these guys have been all over the world together and they've been through battles in their housing projects. I mean, they've seen and done a lot. And they don't always see each other. You know, they don't all live in the same neighborhood anymore. These are grown men, some in their 50s, you know, pushing 50. So I knew that if I could, you know, I did all these really in-depth individual interviews with them. And I think having the ability to do both, to do the individual, you know, one-on-one, to give them each individual the real focus they deserve to really speak their mind. And then having them all in the room together kind of in a weird, interesting way keeps everyone honest, or at least everyone has a different window into a similar event. And I think that's just a human phenomenon, not just exclusive to Wu-Tang Clan.
So for someone who's listening to this and thinking, I like their music, I kind of know it's a cultural touchstone, I recognize that it's cool to say I like Wu-Tang Clan. What do you think made them so special, made them unique, and the thing that's made them iconic? What is it about Wu-Tang Clan and its history?
I think there's a certain level of freedom. I think that, honestly, that's why they appeal to a lot of white fans. At the time when RZA was putting his music together, hip-hop had become really polished and refined and shiny suits and, you know, really poppy. And he made this music that didn't care about hooks or choruses. And it was just really mainlining the blues. I mean, that's all black music is ever anyway. It's the blues. But he had a direct line into the blues. And I think the blues is a universal sort of emotion. And I think because they were so open with how they felt through the music expressing their feelings and their experiences, it was universal and undeniable.
When when the men sat down and watched the footage, was there something that they all reacted to that was really like just had a visceral reaction for them all?
Well, seeing ODB was really hard on some of the guys.
Sure.
I mean, it's to see men in general cry is a thing, and to see black men cry is a whole other thing. And I think the vulnerability that these guys have displayed in this film is really important, you know, not just for fans of Wu-Tang, mm-hmm. but for people who want a better understanding of what the black experience is. You know, so often, you know, the stuff that we make gets relegated to, let's examine it during Black History Month. But that's why I called the film Of Mice and Men. We all know the book Of Mice and Men. It's an American classic, and the Wu-Tang Clan are an American classic, and their story is classically American for so many reasons.
Such as?
Racism, horrible experiences with education. I mean, I can relate to this idea of going to school and feeling other and not anyone having any expectations for us. You know, I tell the story all the time. Me and Nasir Jones went to mm-hmm. the same junior high, and independent of one another, we both had the same experience. Guidance counselors told us both that we should go to vocational school. Now, don't get me wrong. Maybe their thinking was, well, what else can these people do? And I put these people in quotes. But what if Nasir Jones would have gone to vocational school? Maybe he would rap on the weekends after he had spent the week fixing refrigerators. And that, I guess that's not a bad thing, but we would have missed out on a really important artist.
My guest is Sasha Jenkins. The name of his film is Wu-Tang Clan of Mics and Men. It's 4-hour-long episodes. The first episode premieres tonight at 9 on Showtime. So these guys, they grew up in the projects in Staten Island and in Brooklyn. They're very candid about what they had to do to keep the lights on mm-hmm. before they made it as musicians. A lot mm-hmm. of them, they got involved in the drug trade. When you talk to them now about what they had to do then, what did they tell you?
Well, I think an important thing for people to pick up on in the film, before they talk about selling drugs, they talk about selling newspapers.
Right.
Right? Going back to this
right.
of Mics and Men, of Mice and Men, this very classic American, I'm just a kid, I want to sell newspapers to make money. Selling newspapers on the Verrazano Bridge, making $15 a day. As RZA said, $15 for a welfare family is a big deal. So they go from selling newspapers to packing bags at the supermarket. That doesn't seem odd. That seems pretty common. Unfortunately, many of us, we later realized we had great cultural capital, but no social capital. So all of a sudden, as Raekwon says in the film, when you learn that your neighborhood is worth $250,000 a day, that's interesting to me. And so when you're dealing with minds that aren't developed, 14-year-old kids, you're dealing with peer pressure, knowing that your parents can't get you certain things, there's a whole cocktail of reasons. And I know this for a fact because I grew up, I am of that. And I felt it was important for people to understand, you know, I've always wondered, all these people love Wu-Tang, but do you really understand what they're talking about, where it comes from?
Right.
And me being who I am and what I've experienced, there were things that I would see as a filmmaker that other people weren't, that I feel are really important to unwrapping not only Wu-Tang Clan. If you watch this film, you're learning the story of any rapper who comes from the hood, from a single parent situation, horrible schools, racism, dealing with sharks on the street selling drugs, and then learning about the sharks in the music industry.
But there's also this interesting moment with Method Man, who makes the point of like, we were middle class, very middle class.
Right.
And you hear him code switch at one point.
Okay.
As I thought was just so interesting that there was, I thought it was interesting, you were also showing like not everybody's the same. Like this group comes together and they make this music together, but you can't just say like, that's a Wu-Tang Clan member. They all are individuals. They're individual stories.
Well, Meth goes back to his job at Statue of Liberty.
That's when he code switches a little bit.
Right, and his boss, his former boss, asks him, are you still living in the same place? He says, yes. But what he meant to say was Staten Island, but
yeah.
in a nicer, quote-unquote, nicer neighborhood. And he said, well, you know, my children didn't have to live where I grew up. Not that he had an issue with it, but it speaks to this idea of what success means in America. And so Method Man can go back to this place where he used to work and he can demonstrate that he has become successful on the strength of words that he's manipulated, which is amazing to me.
There's this also interesting through line about how Wu-Tang Clan
took on the music industry and created a model that worked for them, or that they thought worked for them. Would you explain, folks, what that model was and why it was unique?
Well, the two main, most seasoned guys in the group, RZA and his cousin, GZA, they both individually, before Wu-Tang, had record deals that went sour, didn't pan out the way they wanted. They felt artistically they swayed to the whims of the people who were cutting the checks, and they regretted it deeply. So RZA, we got this footage that a student from Brooklyn College shot way back of RZA, before anything, explaining, listen, I went through this thing. The music industry, they treat you like you're their son. We're not going to be their sons. We're going to be in control of our destiny. So he had learned from his initial experience that if you give the labels X amount of control, you lose yourself. He didn't want to do that again. And that's what's really powerful about Wu-Tang, creating music that no one expected to have any real reach beyond underground hip hop. And then being in a position to say, all right, well, you don't want me, or you've got to take all of us. Don't worry that there's 9 people. I'm telling you it's going to work. And if you don't want to work with me, then fine. I don't care. He found Steve Rifkin at Loud Records, who said, okay, I want to sign the group, but you have the freedom to get the individual guys. They can go elsewhere to other record companies. If I can't match what is being offered, they're free to go. And that was a revolutionary move in the music industry. And that really helped to build the Wu-Tang empire.
Who was the branding mastermind?
There's so many people, but a gentleman named Power, Oliver Power Grant, another childhood friend who was there, Divine, Mitchell Divine Diggs, who's RZA's brother. And I think that branding developed in the way that the music developed. You see the rapport that they have amongst one another. For instance, the conversation is a conversation about who came up with Wu-Tang.
Right.
Right? And so some guys are saying, I don't know. I heard it was Ghostface first. And Ghost says, listen, we were calling the Ballantine Ale, you know, the Shaolin and another beer, Wu-Tang, right? It started out as a kung fu movie that kung fu movies were being referenced. Other things were getting the title of these kung fu movies, just slang stuff. Oh, that beer is Wu-Tang, whatever. And then, you know, so then RZA's like, well, I saw the movie first, you know. And so they're having this battle over who came up with it. And in the end, they just say, whatever, you know, we're a unit. That's what matters. And it was that singular focus, everyone getting on board with what RZA's vision is, where the real strength lies.
My guest is Sasha Jenkins. He directed the film Wu-Tang Clan of Mike's Men. It's a docuseries. There's 4-hour episodes. The first episode premieres tonight on Showtime. I'm interested. You're a journalist. You've been a music journalist. You're a filmmaker. And you're getting all of these different stories and takes on what happened. How did you keep your journalistic integrity when you're getting it from all these different angles?
I mean, you have to maintain balance. That's what journalism is. Everyone's looking at the same event 25 years later. Everyone remembers it differently. So sometimes, in my opinion, the truth is in the middle. Everyone remembers it slightly differently from their perspective. And I think there is enough balance in the piece where you can make your own decision. In so many cases, with what was on screen, I didn't want to preach and tell you this is what you should believe. I wanted to give you all the tools so you can make the decision for yourself.
Did you ever find yourself in a position to have to challenge somebody's account of it?
There's a scene where, I don't know if this is answering your question, there's a scene where ODB's widow talks about her learning the principles of the 5% Nation, particularly learning the meaning of her name, and she struggled with that meaning. And she tells a story of ODB locking her in a bathroom until she learned how to do it.
She's crying through this.
And she's crying. And there were people who felt that you should really push the idea that she was abused and get that perspective from other people, you know, or find a way to balance it, you know. But I felt that I wanted her to make her statement, I asked her after she said that, I said, so, and it helped you? And she said, yes. And she went on to explain that it gave her meaning. The name, this new name that she was given, gave her a meaning and a that didn't exist before. It gave her purpose. Now, is there abuse along the way? Probably, right? But she's not saying it's abuse. She's saying that it gave her purpose. And the 5% Nation, for those who don't know, is a belief system that partially originated from the Nation of Islam. A gentleman named Clarence 13X left that organization and brought a lot of those teachings to kids on the street, and then had his own sort of math and sciences to go along with it. And although I don't agree with everything in terms of the tactics of the 5% Nation, growing up, I remember, and you gods know what I'm talking about, if you didn't know your daily mathematics, you would catch a universal beatdown. And for me, the idea of beating someone for not knowing something comes from slavery. But that's a whole other, I'm going off topic. But the point I'm trying to make is, regardless of that, I know the value and power of hip hop. When you have the ability to name yourself, I am Method Man. You know, Smith, mm-hmm. his last name doesn't come from Africa, right? So when you have the ability, whether you're a graffiti artist or a rapper, you have the ability to reimagine yourself and name yourself something that has meaning outside of this assigned identity that comes from, doesn't always come from a great place. There's great power with that. And so I wanted people to understand that when she talked about what she got from the 5% Nation, although she's crying, you can determine how you feel about the tactics, but those were the tactics that were employed. She still maintained that it gave her a sense of identity and what black music is in America, and fashion and all of these things that go along with our culture. It really boils down to identity. And that's what Wu-Tang Clan represents beyond blackness now, because mm-hmm. everyone loves Wu-Tang. But when you see that W, you don't just think a rap group. You think the identity of hip hop. And the identity of hip hop is for everyone. Everyone loves hip hop. Doesn't matter what color you are. And so when you see that W, that identity is something that so many of us have assigned to ourselves, and it's changed a lot of our lives, including my own.
You go into so much in the film. It's 4 hours. We can't get all to all of it in 20 minutes. You go through the Hot 97 issue. You go through, sadly, ODB's death. You go through the group having a intersection with Martin Shkreli. We won't give too much away in case people don't remember. What story, what did you hear that you knew nothing about Wu-Tang?
Well, there are misconceptions. I'd always heard that the single Protect Your Neck, which was their first single, was inspired by the fact that Ghostface Killah got shot in the neck. So it's in the film. So he says, no, that's not why we wrote, I got shot, but that's not why we wrote Protect Your Neck. But that was, there's so much mythology associated with these guys, and it came from a quote unquote credible source. I'm not going to out you, and I was embarrassed, but I believed that for so many years. But really, it was, you'll learn in the film, they were about chopping off the heads of MCs, not literally, but really their tongues were their swords and their words were their weapons, and they were out there battling rappers, not battling people and murdering them, battling them with their skills and their abilities as artists. And that's the other thing that people don't realize about hip hop. We had a really strong gang culture here in the 60s and 70s, and it was hip hop that provided an alternative, and to mm-hmm. see where hip hop has gone and how it's affected so many people. So this really aggressive energy battling on the street doesn't have to be violent. And there's a level of respect that comes out of really giving it your all. And Wu-Tang, as you learn if you watch the film, they were very competitive amongst one another. Their abilities pushed one another to be the best that they could be.
The name of the film is Wu-Tang Clan of Mics and Men. The first episode premieres tonight on Showtime. Sasha, thanks for coming to the studio.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to All of It on WNYC.